Welcome to a special edition of Real Poets. Most episodes begin with a film, a frame, a story projected onto a screen. But every artist is a collection of stories. The movies they carry with them, the books that change them, the friendships that shape them, and the moments that help them discover their voice. In our new series, Real Poets Portraits, we explore these stories. Here, we step away from a single film and turn our attention to the artist behind the art, tracing the influences, experiences, and relationships that made them who they are. For our first portrait, we're joined by poet, rapper, educator, and founding Mayhem poet, Kyle Rapps. Kyle is not only an accomplished artist in his own right, but someone whose friendship and creative influence helped shape our very own Scott Raven's poetic journey. Together, we'll explore the roads traveled, the stories collected, and the films that continue to inspire the work. So join us as we look beyond the poem, beyond the performance, and into the life that made them possible. This is Real Poets Portraits, where we still keep it real.
After meeting in an acting class freshman year at Rutgers University, these two broke kids, a goofy white dude and his super cool mixed friend, would try and write. While at night, we'd ironically serve fancy hors d'oeuvres in our black and whites. Our boss, who was a bit of a coke hound, drove a snowplow just for fun, even when there was no snow on the ground. One summer, myself and my new friend were asked by our higher up to paint the roof of the catering hall for a little extra cash. And because it would get so unbearably hot up there, we were tasked with painting it a shiny silver for added insulation. On one particular grueling day, multiple paint cans tipped over and spilled on all of our clothes. Now, if I remember correctly, Kyle might have accidentally stepped inside of one of these paint cans. Spiritually moved by a Pharrell Monch lyric or Jurassic 5 groove. Incidentally, this was the same day we were intent on asking our snowy boss for a raise, underpaid for what we were up against. So at the end of our sweaty shift, we entered his office, soiling his floors with aluminum foil and dripping paint cans, looking like a two-headed, overworked, tired tin man. Of course, he laughed in our face, tabulating the price of all the paint we must have wasted. Unsurprisingly, and dare I say, generously, agreed to a 50-cent addition to our hourly wage, contingent on our completion of the task at hand. But what either gentleman didn't realize is that I would have done it for free. What might have been a tough, thankless summer gig turned out to be one of the greatest life lessons music, poetry I'd ever received, cementing a friendship that would last 27 years to the day. While I introduced him to theater, improv, comedy, and all things Weird Al, he hipped me to hip-hop, a smorgasbord of Biggie and Tupac, interlacing Master Ace with Eminem, Wu-Tang with Dr. Oct, bumping Fugees and Rakim on this rocky rooftop. And believe it or not, with tremendous courage, enormous heart, and the wildest of wits, somehow, these Wizard of Oz rejects made something of themselves as full-time poets. Inspired by the movie Fight Club, we met in a diner devising our own plan for word domination. It was there where we laid plans for an off-campus open mic or write club called Verbal Mayhem that would eventually morph into Mayhem Poets, the true source of my lifeblood for years. And ever since those days on that Somerset rooftop, we've traveled the world together performing things we wrote for crowds of thousands, inside castles and stadiums, on stages in nearly every state, through thick and through thin, enduring countless losing seasons of the Knicks to this most recent championship win. I've known you through two dogs in 9 different apartments in 8 different cities, from scuba diving the depths of a quarry in Pennsylvania to the top of a Hulu peak of Mount Kilimanjaro. An imagination overlord, uncapped pen, our friendship has literally and figuratively raised the roof for decades on end. Welcome to Real Poets, and welcome, Kyle Rapps.
Okay, yeah, well, yeah, so I just want to briefly say that, you know, I got into poetry, you know, when I was really young. I put Scott on to spoken word poetry when we met at Rutgers. We became obsessed with spoken word poetry as sort of a way to gather people through, we hosted an open mic together that sort of we just almost majored in. I mean, became our main focus. And then that grew into a touring theater company once we both graduated that we did full time called Mayhem Poets. And then that theater company is still alive, but it was our full-time thing for over 10 years, along with some other poet that we work with. And we've been friends for what, 27 years?
27 years, yeah. I mean, it was.
Those early, this is like the kind of friendship that is artistically, there's artistic kind of bones, strong bones too, and fleshed out, experiences too. But there's also like life experience stuff that we've seen each other, grow and change and gone through things together and apart. And so, yeah, I mean, this is a man, one of my lifelong friends that I just feel so blessed to be connected to.
Likewise, to make a living as a poet, and then it was like make a life, and it has been a through line through my whole life, as is our friendship. I mean, we've created influences back and forth, where he was the hip hop influence, a little bit on my work. I was a theatrical influence on him. But we were big into, kind of stand-up comedy as well, or just
Movies.
the way and movies, but the way that any artist, would put words together, that we would eventually create a script that, got to travel around the world.
The first time I met Scott, or really that Scott made an impression on me, we were in acting class at Rutgers University. I had come from kind of this kind of hood experience. I was a troubled youth, a lot of drugs, crime stuff, and I got it together. I got sober really young. One of the big things for me that was transformative was being able to find a place to put this addictive energy, right? When I got sober, and it was found open mics, and I found that to be dynamic and people expressing themselves, dealing with trauma, but also funny, and there was this great community. And so when I got to Rutgers, there was more white folks than I'd ever seen in a way that was like, I was, whoa. And I see Scott, and he's in this acting class, and he gets up, and he's this white dude that I've never, a brand of white dude I've never seen in my life. First of all, he gets up, he's on crutches because I guess he had had some recent basketball injury,
Basketball injury,
and
athlete
he's
background.
on crutches, and he's talking about he's got a broken heart, and then he gets up on stage, and the assignment, it was all these weird,
Make a lip sync. Do a lip sync.
assignments. It was a lip syncing assignment for the acting class. He had to pick a song, lip sync. He gets up and he does "What Is Love," but it's like not the. It's not even the "What Is Love" song. It's this weird DJ remix version where it just every now and then just goes "What Is Love," and then he had these cue cards and it was like him picture me without a broken heart and flying
Nice
free throughout the
movie.
world with no crutches and he's doing the crutches like wings and I'm like and he's just and it's just insane and everyone's in stitches. And I thought, I got to get to know this dude, And as we started talking, that was where the love for poetry came out. And I saw that he was theater and he was freaking Shakespeare, remixing Shakespeare. And he had a poem called The Midlife Crisis of Dionysus. And we're sitting at the dining hall and he's talking about Ophelia giving you a nice sucking blow. And I was
Well,
like, what
that
the?
was Fallatio
Oh,
Horatio,
sorry,
actually.
Felicia. Sorry,
Fallatio Horatio.
So he's just flipping it. And I'm like, this dude is, to me, that's hip hop. To me, that's like a whole, he doesn't even know he's doing it, And so, and then I shared, some of the stuff that I had done, which is more hip hop based. And he really got me to break out of my shell, theatrically and try different types of things, be more vulnerable, lean into some comedy stuff. And I think I got him more into sort of like tapping into a grounded kind of flow and a hip hop scheme that would connect with audiences. And, man, it was like a creative match made in heaven.
I remember one of my early poems was about your mama jokes,
Oh,
actually,
yeah.
too. And that was one
Yes.
thing that I decided to share at like kind of a first kind of open mic that he brought me to. And it was early on and was about me being in school and people tossing out like your mama this, your mama this. And then me following up with, no, actually, my mom is dead because my mom did pass when I was 15. And it would be clever retorts. I got that from Mad Magazine, kind of like witty, snappy answers to stupid questions or whatever
But it
like
was fun
that.
though. It would be like, I fucked your mom, John, your mom. And even, oh, really? Oh, you like necrophilia?
Yeah,
Like,
necrophilia
everyone's
for
taking this.
sure. And just tapping into that. And like it was not making light of it, but another way of alchemizing pain. And flash forward, we'll talk. Kyle, he ends up losing his mom while we're in the middle of a poetry tour.
My
And that was
condolences,
a
brother.
a huge bonding moment for us, and that he had to leave in mid-tour to go be with her at some of her final moments.
Yeah, I mean, so you have this creative, experience that we had together that, then, we started this open mic. We become obsessed with this open mic. We started proselytizing this open mic like we were Latter-day Saints, going to freshman dorms, going to bus stops, going to the hood, and we packed this open mic that was called Verbal Mayhem. We packed this open mic with everyone in my dorm, and it was insane. And that became the baseline for us to tour together as the Mayhem Poets. Once we graduated, but we never want to stop doing this. We love this. We love seeing people brought together, sharing their joys, their pains, but in a way where we always wanted new people to feel welcome. We'd always like make sure everyone was showing extra love for the first time person. And it was like, rather than it just be like this cliquish, Hollywoodish, well, all the poets who know each other or the core group, it was like, no, we want the new person to like so that we can keep building this thing, which was fantastic for us. And then, once we couldn't get enough, we graduate and we would just hang out and just argue over poetry lines or laugh while writing together. And it just became this deeply collaborative effort, with that ended up being the script that we ended up touring the world with Mayhem Poets and building a whole company on. And so then by the time, we're now we've been on the Today Show, this I'm talking about like a few years out of college, was it 2008 or 7. And we've been on the Today Show and, we have this Broadway manager, right, who's doing all the big Broadway shows. They have us now, you know what I mean? And here we are, and we'd already done the new Victory Theater, which is on Broadway, children's theater, all the prestigious children's theaters, throughout the country. We're getting a good money, right? Like poets, right? And now we're in Canada, and I get the call that my mom has like, a couple months to live, And what was so, I mean, obviously it's one of the most painful, grief-stricken moments in my life, but Scott knew exactly what it was. He knew what I was about to go through. And he was so, and we were business partners at the time in Mayhem Poets, and he was so understanding,
Well, you had
and
some hesitancy. Yeah, do I leave the
I
tour?
didn't
Do
know
I
what to
do?
do.
And it
Because we
was,
were at
yeah.
our peak. It's like, hey, we're making a living doing this thing, and that was when, we decided to reach out to one of our other college buddies who we knew was a talented poet. And of course, he was also loving and he had been through some stuff with his mother. And that's one of the things that, poetry communities can really bring together too, is, because people in these communities are often sharing real shit that's going on, it can be trauma bonding, it can be, but it can also just be like a great source of support. And, so Reggie Mikumari, he got it. He came right out. He flew right out. He was in the first flight. I had to do a show. That was one of the hardest moments of my life. So we had one show I had to do in the morning before my flight. And it was, 3,000 middle schoolers, and I'm having to do these like poems to get them going and connect with them. And, by that time we had done hundreds of shows. So you're able to push through. But in the back of your mind, my mom's died. So that was kind of a trip. But yeah, at any rate, so our connection is, it has gone that deep, but also we've had some of the best laughs and the lightest moments as well.
Yeah, I mean, that brings up the idea of when you're on stage, overcome by genuine emotion, and how
if it's too close to when something's happened, how you can even actually get through a piece.
Yeah. I mean, I ended up writing this piece that was about my mother's death. She died of cancer, right? And it's funny because, I didn't write that piece or really perform that piece till like, maybe a year after. For me, it's always been hard to like write when after I go through a thing. It's like I'm still processing it. So to necessarily write about it and express it right then and there doesn't feel as doesn't feel ready oftentimes, unless it's anger. For me, if it's anger, I'm like, let
Easier
me
to
write
tap
some shit
into.
and get that shit off. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways, but yeah, we're kind of going all over the place.
Right.
No,
Yeah.
no, no. It's good because first of all, you're synthesizing the conversation that we had, so I appreciate
I
that.
appreciate it.
But it leads me to another place because I empathize with that. My father passed away from pancreatic cancer in 2020, and my best friend growing up, his mom passed from cancer very early from that. And then him and my sister actually bonded over that, and they're in the dead parents club. So for her birthday, he got her a shirt that says "Baddie with a dead daddy."
Oh,
And
wow. That's
she wears the
warm,
hell out of that shirt. But
though.
it's interesting how these are experience. This is life that we're living, and it's putting it together. I may have said this in another podcast, but I believe we are made up of all the pieces of everybody we've ever loved and everybody who's ever loved us, which means that, like the first time I tried sushi, it wasn't because I thought, oh, that looks good. It was because, my grandfather said, hey, this is good. You should try it. And I tried it. And it's because of him. The way I part my hair is my dad. The way I tie my tie is my godfather. My half smile is my mom, right? Like I made up of all of these things. And you guys just talked about how you make up pieces of each other in how you came up and what you do. So I'm wondering, well, I did a little research as well, and you were a busy boy because while all of that was happening, you were also going by skeptic, opening up for Talib Kweli. You started a group called Thought Breakers, if I'm
That's what it
right. So you have this deeply ingrained presence, notion, whatever you want to call it. Like hip hop is part of your life. You're putting it into your poetry. You're starting Mayhem Poets. You're starting Thought Breakers. You go from skeptic to black skeptic to now Kyle Raps. Working with people like, again, like when I researched it, I was like, what? You know KRS-One? Like KRS-One, Talib Kweli. You open for Fat Joe. You open for Dead Prez, right? Like, so you're ingrained in these worlds that are coming together. And when I met Scott, one of the things we hit it off on was hip hop, like just growing up. Like I'm a 90s kid, right? So with this influence of hip hop, with the influence of poetry, one of the things that you guys connected on as well is movies. Here at Real Poets, we talk about films and poetry. How has movie watching, I personally believe that most poetry, if not maybe all poetry, is ekphrastic, just because of what I said before, where every album that was shown to us has influenced us. Every movie we've seen has influenced us. Every art piece somebody showed us has every book, right? Like it's part of what we do, it's part of our vernacular. And that's where we throw out references and inside jokes and whatnot. What films have you guys connected on and have influenced your work in Mayhem Poets?
Well, yeah, the first one was definitely Fight Club. I remember, we went out to one of them cinemas somewhere in Jersey at some strip mall.
Yeah, in Somerset, yeah.
I remember watching that thing, and it was just like, whoa, this is a weird, subversive, alternative way. And we were young, so it was the first exposure to that kind of like, oh wow, they really did some different shit. You know what I mean? And we were like thirsty for some for to do some different shit, with poetry, not for it to just be like your regular kind of vanilla open mic. We wanted to go Christmas caroling with slam poems. We wanted to, slam caroling. We wanted to do, slamogram telegrams, that type of stuff we did, we wanted to get this poetry group to actually like do things that like actually impacted the community in interesting ways. And so Fight Club really was, I think, the first thing that kind of maybe the most influential one.
Which and was so much about not being materialists in any way as well, where I mean, we were massively consuming media of films and TV shows, but yeah, early on, I guess yeah, I mean
This is a lot of
it
movies.
was
We watch a lot of stuff.
that really steered us away from, you know, like I guess we'll say going into the corporate world right off the bat. But if we were to go in that world, we were going to bring what we love to that, whether it was poetry, hip hop, or whatnot. Like we wanted to be able to do that. But it was, I don't know if it's anti-capitalist early on that we were, but it was so much like, all right, we want to do what we love for life and for living. After we graduated, like, all right, this is what we want to do, all from Fight Club.
But I remember we were also, I mean, the Tarantino stuff was big. You're young,
Ugh.
you're men, you're is it? But we would even bond on things like, we both love basketball, so like, we would reminisce over having seen White Men Can't Jump, for example. Like, you know what I mean? Like that had an impression on me when I was in 8th grade, as it did him. So we would bond on talking about movies like that.
Right.
Especially ones that like cross cultural barriers. And in early on, which brings us to the one that I think, and Fight Club was the first and arguably the most influential in terms of like, doing something different within a system. But I'd say the most influential creatively was the movie Slam, right? And that was Saul Williams, Sonia Sohn, and it was like this, it was so mind-blowing. It's like, if for those who don't know, it's about a young dude who's growing up in Southeast Washington, D.C., which at the time was like very hood. And he's a weed dealer, and it's played by Saul Williams, who was at the time like the number one slam poet in the world. And this is when slam poetry was like in its early golden age, right? 90s, late 90s. And so this is his acting debut with like a little bit of a budget. And him gets arrested, and he uses slam poetry to sort of like navigate his way through the prison system. And now, how am I going to transcend my record? And everyone is just rooting for him, to sort of like shine beyond what's going on. And of course, there's like an English teacher at the prison system who's like, got the guys, got all the prison dudes like using poetry. And then this was just mind-blowing to us. And I don't know how much spoilering you want to
Right,
do or you
right.
want to talk about, but I will say there's this scene. So it's like, okay, which gang are you with? And he's like, well, I'm not gang like that. I'm a po. I'm like, I'm trying to just do my thing. Like now you got to choose a side. And then like, this rival gang is coming at him, and then this gang that wants to back him up on the, is coming at the rival gang, and he just gets in the middle, and he just spits a slam palm right when these gangs are about to like go at it on the yard, kill each other. He just spits this incredible slam palm. That's sort of about emancipating your mind from mental slavery type thing, right? And the gangs are like, they don't know what to do. They're mentally, emotionally flabbergasted by his dynamic, powerful performance. And
That actually dissipates the conflict
it's
right
just
there.
insane, and they do it in a way that looks kind of realistic. You're like, whoa, like they pulled that off. And so that, and then just his level of artistry at the time was like godlike to us. We were like, oh my God, this is what we want to be, and so and it showcased that movie showcased it wonderfully. So Slam was huge. Slam was huge.
I haven't seen it. I'm looking forward to seeing it.
that. Yeah, you're great, man.
You and I definitely, I'm gonna annoy you with questions about touring with those guys or opening for those guys or working with those guys. I love
Oh
Talib
no, with the
Kweli.
rap thing, bro.
Yeah.
It was really interesting because we had this group, Thought Breakers, and we would win every battle. We were like the Rutgers rap group, you know what I'm saying? And
Yeah.
Rutgers is a big school, so they'd have a budget to have, we opened up for Mobb Deep, they came, we opened up for Clips, And this is 2001, 2002, into 2003. And it was like we would win all the battles of the bands. We would do all this stuff, and then and then they would just put us up to open up for all these people because it was like, oh, we got a group that could do that. And when we opened up for Talib Kweli, we had just put out our first little album, and I mean, it was incredible. So many Rutgers people showed up. It was hundreds of Rutgers people who were fans by that point, and it was just so cool because we like, it was like Talib's like, who are these guys? They must, it was kind of dope. So we got to do some cool things. Got to open up for Fat Joe. Yeah, man, that was, and it was a situation where our talent was like solid, and but our business sense wasn't aligned. So that was my first kind of, group heartbreak. Was like we wanted to be these, so we wanted to be the next Black Star. You know what I
Oh
mean?
man, yeah.
And I think we had, some potential, but yeah, it's like you realize how much it takes in order for. In order to actually like get there on the career level. And Mayhem Poets had that. Mayhem Poets had the market, the talent, but also the willingness to navigate tour life, and keep creating and show up. And sometimes it's going to be a shitty show and you got to like just make lemonade and get better at doing that. And yeah, so it was
Right. Well, what interesting he meant, opening up for some of those acts, some of those opportunities. I was working volunteer at the college at the as the program counselor or program director, whatever. So I could bring different artists to campus. So oftentimes, like we would bring some of our heroes or some people that we admired, and then Thought Breakers would open up or some other
That
people would
also
open
was
up.
advantage, yeah.
Now, fast forward for a couple of years, this was me on one side of this program council and then learning kind of the ins and outs of that. And then we find this National Association for Campus Activities, this thing called NACA, where we are showcasing before all these colleges so that then we can become, all right, we want you at
So that was how we
your
ended up doing
college.
college tours. So what was cool was, we were the cool thing about, okay. I know I'm a little off topic because you're talking about movies,
I'm gonna bring it back, so don't worry about it. Just
Okay. But
follow your heart, Kyle.
the cool thing about Mayhem Poets was that, we wanted to do this for a living. We love poetry and we're willing to try whatever, So elementary school show, yeah, we got one. And we just what can we do? We just, how can we tweak Roses Are Red? How can we get there? And you learn it. And the first one we did was like, a little bit of a dud, but
Well,
we
we
did,
did
but we did it for,
the MLK
well, yeah.
program.
Yeah, we did MLK programming and we're just trying things, throwing stuff at the wall, but we just kept doing it. And before you know it, we actually became, quite adept at like connecting with first, second, third graders around slam poetry and like sought after specifically for that. We are the ones to like do the assembly or whatever. And this is before we were at the bigger theater level. Same thing with middle schools. It was like middle schools is like, okay, how what's appropriate? How can we go? I remember the first time we had one woman with us, guest poet with Mayhem Poets, who came and just cursed too much. He's coming out of college. She's like saying fuck this, fuck that. And it's like sixth graders, seventh graders, and whatever. And then back to them. But you learn all the rules, you learn how close you can get to the line with all the different age groups, and then before you know it, hey, we got a little budget for you. So we would just our what we had was something that people wouldn't even believe it. We would be like, hey, we do a high school, and they say, oh man, my teacher, colleague, my friend, she would love to have you at our elementary school, but it probably wouldn't be that appropriate. And we would be like, no, we actually do elementary schools. So it was like people wouldn't even believe it. They're like, yeah, come on, you guys are the ones that can actually connect with the eighth graders. No one can do that. But like, no, then we would go into the K through twos. But yeah, so that was something that, it was like we actually got good at all these different demographics. College was more nat was the most natural because that was where we came out of with Verbal Mayhem. And so, here we were doing elementary school where we're talking about, like Martin Luther King and everyone hands up, hands down, and doing all this kind of stuff to get kids on stage and get basics of poetry. And then that same night, we will be doing some next level weird, perverted, erotic, or revolutionary stuff for college kids, right?
Well, it's about knowing your
And
audience and communication, right? Like you guys as poets become experts in communicating and you know how to tailor your message to get your point across, right? You're not going to use the same language for two-year-old for second graders that you would for college kids, but the message, the themes that you're imparting could be impactful or of a similar nature, just a different way of getting it through.
Yes, and that's where kind of I think the Project Mayhem, you know, where you're like, we're gonna do an elementary school show. We're not just gonna be your basic, you know, like, hey,
Flats
like,
family.
yeah, or whatever, like, hey, roses are red, violets are blue, you're really cute, I love you, you know. We're like, no, we're gonna like do something that's gonna like get the teachers a little bit nervous, but then by the end they're gonna be like, oh wow, they really did some different shit there, you know what I mean?
Well, I like the word Mayhem Poets. The word poets gets you in the door in a school atmosphere. The show, us being good at what we do, gets us invited back time and time again. Just having the like, there's other people that do workshops in school, but you know, we don't get associated necessarily with just being poets because it's just all right, a good show that you're going out to actually to see
Yeah,
that hits
you
on
want to
you.
be able to transcend the poet moniker. I think that another thing that we bonded on and that will also influence a lot of being able to hit on many levels and many layers is The Simpsons, right? You know, we just like we both were, you know, big fans, and we wanted to write like a poem for first graders that also wouldn't. Because if like the teachers are engaged in the poem for first graders, the teachers want you back because like they just had a nice time too. You know what I mean? And so it's like you throw a little bit of stuff in there for everybody. So yeah, I mean, I've always been enamored with art that can do that as well. And I think that we tried our best to do that, and I think we succeeded on a lot of levels.
But in order to be able to, you got to tap into your inner kid as well as, you know, the age that you're currently at too. I mean, like,
Agree.
yeah, to be able to be able
Yeah,
to.
and that was what we talked. We had so much fun because we're just like doing all this goofy shit. You know, and just stuff that we know is so silly and just laughing our asses off. But then also we throw in some next level, like weird, you know, like fucking Kafka reference. You know what I mean? So it was just, we had a nice time.
Yeah, I mean,
Dynamic.
you're the Pixar of poets, but Pixar, bringing it back to movie studios, I thought I'd do something fun. Scott is your friend. Scott is my friend. We both know he's genetically incapable of taking part in a lightning round. So we call it a molasses round.
Okay,
But we
go
wanted to
ahead.
do a real poet's lightning round on movies and poetry, just things that I'm curious about and seeing. And then we can actually talk more a little bit about what it is that we're discussing, right? But I'm going to ask the question to both of you, and please answer. A movie that feels like a poem.
Hi.
Pie. Scotty.
Rushmore.
Okay.
Awesome.
So why pie? I can gather, but for our listeners, why pie and then why Rushmore?
Gonna say pie, like the narrative of it is like, you know, he's narrating the whole thing almost like a poem. And then, you know, visually it, you know, it's so layered and it's minimalist, but at the same time, he's like, you know, it's wordy, it's visual word economy.
And Rushmore is it's a play too. It's a performance. I mean, there's theater within theaters within it. I remember, what do they do? The play of
It's like Miss
Serpico, I think he
Saigon. Oh,
does,
yeah, they do all the
for
talk.
kids. And I just really connected that idea of like that he was over involved in extracurricular activities, but this poetry being like the main extracurricular. Extra, extra. Rushmore. How about you, Renz?
We've already done it on the podcast. Wings of Desire.
Oh,
Wings of Desire definitely feels like a poem. Just the German expressionism at all, the symbolism of the angels, the black and white, the surrealism of having Peter Falk play himself, but as an angel.
and any Hodorowskis, those ones are coming
I
soon.
knew that was
I'll
coming,
put you
bud.
on to that.
I knew Hodorowski was
I'll
coming
put
for
you on
you.
because Nate put me onto one of them. Oh, yeah.
All right, next one. A poem you turn into a movie. What is a
Of
poem that you turn into a movie?
our own work or of somebody that we
Sure.
admire.
I mean, you know, like Howl, Allen Ginsberg was, you know, like the movie Howl was based off the poem Howl, right? Like a poem of yours, a poem of a poet you admire. What poem would you turn into a movie?
An Om. Saul Williams Om. We just kind of so intergalactic and still also grounded at the same time.
The word, one word, Om. Yeah, we would do the poem we wrote together, piece of a basketball game between team violence and team peace.
I like that one, yeah. Da
Hello and welcome back to the World Championship matchup between Team Violence and Team Peace. This is Jimmy Aries.
And I'm Bob Adonis, live from the McDonald's Coliseum here in Athens, Greece, where Team Peace has been taking a beating from the beginning.
That's right, Bob. They're being outshot, outstolen, outblocked, and boxed out of every chance for positive change.
They just can't stop drive-bys from taking open shots in the lane.
While pain and fear are rejecting any attempt for peace to win this game.
Charlie Manson is getting away with murder in the paint.
While rage, resentment, and hate have converted on virtually every fast break.
We've got addicts smoking Dr. J's, hooked on hook shots like dope, dunking their noses in coke.
Seems like faith and hope are playing tug of war with no rope.
While pushers stay on the block and score every time from the high post.
The drug trade speed has found a crack in the just say no zone defense.
As holes in the ozone grow over 3/10 with every careless CFC free throw attempt.
But you gotta admit, Bob, homophobia is having a little trouble sticking his man and is leaving open-mindedness wide open from three-point land.
But gay rights is struggling to put it in the hole, while the Catholic Church keeps cock-blocking Dennis Rodman from playing the field. Goal.
As neo-Nazis and bigots keep running the spick and roll.
Terrorist bombers control the suicide lines, while war criminals use Fox News media spin moves to get inside mines.
Jim Crow flies from half-court lines to divide lives, letting biased crime slide the so-called streetwise towards an early casket.
And the KKK keeps burning the cross over and hanging diversity from the basket.
If peace doesn't pull some quick maneuvers, violence will blow out this game,
stadium,
city,
world, and basically destroy the entire universe.
With 5 minutes remaining in the fourth quarter, violence has brought the H-bomb in the game, Bob.
With all the hate on this planet, it seems there's nothing peace can do to prevent them from lighting the fuse.
If that's true, then doesn't everybody lose?
We now take you courtside, where violence is leading 6-6-6-3. And is about to put in their B team.
Wait a minute, the starting five for peace is leaving.
Maybe they've taken enough beatings this evening. At this point, there's really no chance of redeeming a thing.
I mean, unless they could find a coach like Dr. Martin Luther King,
who's just come out of the locker room beaming.
Bob, the entire crowd singing We Shall Overcome and screaming.
Let's take you kingside before he starts speaking.
I have a dream.
Team.
And following close behind,
there they are.
At guard, the miraculous from Nazareth, number 7, Jesus Christ.
At guard, the belly from New Delhi, number 3.14, Buddha.
At forward, weighing 27 pounds of peaceful resistance, Mahatma Gandhi.
At forward, the only force that can truly make a difference, carrying the weight and fate of the world, human kindness.
And at center, at 7 feet from Georgetown, number 33, Patrick Ewing. The Enlightened One.
Inbounds to the Messiah.
Back to Buddha.
Inside to Gandhi.
Who kicks it out to human kindness with a behind-the-back pacifist for three.
It's good.
Hitler.
On the inbounds for violence.
Hesitating.
No. Wait. He's meditating. Buddha's got him deep in subconscious isolation. And there's the whistle. It's a 5-second violation.
Ewing passes to human kindness, who gives
his salary to charity and goes
across court and gives
free health care and Medicaid and goes
overseas and gives
education and treatment for AIDS and every previously incurable disease, then goes
southeast and gives
blood and tsunami relief.
It's the give and go that keeps on giving.
When it seems like everyone's drowning deep in the dark and hopes are thinning, he's dishing outside to Christ, who shoots 10 balls at a time from behind Noah's Ark.
And two by two by two, they're swishing. A few more 30-point conversions like that, and peace might actually be winning.
Is this Jim? Team Violence has put in 5 of the 7 deadly sins.
Pride throws it into greed. who's got Envy wide open but refuses to pass.
While Gluttony's sitting on the bench with a corn dog, yelling at Sloth to get off his lazy ass.
And even though Vanity just got in the game, he keeps checking his stats.
While Wrath just bought the ball from Greed for no cash back, then tackled the referee like a halfback.
While the player formerly known as the movie starring Ben Stiller and Jack Black got jealous of the attack and smacked Patrick Ewing in the kneecap.
What is that?
It's a triple technical.
As Pat shoots three, then goes to the bench to relax.
Team Peace gets the ball back, and Gandhi passes to Jesus, who releases and drops it like stocks on the NASDAQ.
This man's on fire! More than Denzel climbing ladder 49 in the middle of a backdraft.
And Violence calls a timeout. This is incredible, Bob. Peace is on a 662-0 run, which means the I Have a Dream team is only down by one.
With 25 seconds left in the game, it seems they're still under the gun. And Ewing's bum knee has him out for the rest of the match.
Apparently during the timeout, the cheerleaders broke the glass ceiling in half and became team owners and dethroners of Commissioner Stern, like Howard from the K-Rock radio staff.
But back to action. Team Violence has gathered aggression and has decided to employ the full court oppression. We haven't seen a formation like this since before the Civil Rights Movement and the Great Depression.
There's rioters and looters all over the floor, the crowd throwing bottles, tomatoes, horse manure. The courts become trench warfare, defensemen shelling from grassy knolls.
But they just can't stop Gandhi's picket and roll. He pivots, maintains control, gets it to Buddha with 15 seconds left, who takes a lotus breath to regain focus.
10.
9.
He passes to humankind.
Nis, who drives in.
8.
7.
6.
A spin.
5.
4.
Puts up a prayer against war.
3.
2.
Peace will win if they score.
1.
I think for me it would be, you know, it'd be interesting to expand on, to an old woman eating plums, like William Carlos Williams. That one.
Take a five-liner and
take a five-liner and make it into a... But it tastes so good to her. It tastes so good to her. It tastes so good to her.
I love it. Not even a short film.
Yeah.
Kyle's also a Shamborska fan, I wanted to mention.
Yeah, I'm a Shamborska, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's been a long time. So
but
you probably have it.
No, Vocabulary is one of my favorite poems of all time from her.
We were going to be in a poetry class together. Kyle came to the first couple class and just wasn't vibing necessarily with the teacher. It was just not someone that would have felt that was able to extract for what, and it didn't stop his writing. It was just the teacher that he didn't actually vibe with. But it's just an interesting... and the guy, yeah, I mentioned him on the podcast, Anselm Berrigan. He's like in a lineage of poets, but he got me into like sonnets and stuff like that. Not anything what we're talking about, but
molasses round. Favorite poetic image in a film? Think like the floating plastic bag in American Beauty or something like that.
The I mean, you got Fitzcarraldo, Herzog, the carrying the boat over the mountain, but Hodorowski in like the thing, it's not the Sangre, there's an elephant funeral and they have to figure out, first of all, how do you dispose of the body, but it's 100 plus men that are holding an elephant up, bringing it to a burial.
It's a great one. I'm gonna go Karate Kid. Just the image is him standing on the stump doing the crane technique, and there's something about that that just, I could go so deep on that, bro. You don't even want to be starting Karate Kid. There's something about that that just is, it's such an iconic, I mean, the crane, there's just so many things going on there.
No, I love that.
Yeah. Origami, I mean, okay, don't even get me started. So many things.
All right, give me one reason for you.
I love the end of Cinema Paradiso, where grown-up Toto is watching the film Alfredo prepared for him, and you're seeing this montage of movies, but just seeing the actor with tears in his eyes, but all this joy, it's this culmination of, forget the expanded edition where they added the love story in it, but just like where it ended, where he was in his life at that point, and just watching this this love note his mentor left him in terms of love of cinema, and just watching him look at it like that, that's something that always stays in my mind. It's one of my favorite movies. Cinema Paradiso. It's beautiful, yeah, beautiful yeah. music, beautiful cinematography, beautiful story, great performances. He's the same. I forget the name of the actor who played Alfredo, but he's the same one who plays Neruda in El Postino. He's this French actor who plays Italian roles. That one's the one for me. Movie you wish more poets talked about?
Blind Spotting, which I hope to do on this show. That's the one that infuses spoken word within the actual narrative of the film. We talked about Slam a little bit, where, you know, Saul does a poem, not in a just a spoken word cafe setting. I love to see a poem that's performed or delivered that's not just in the traditional place where you would find it.
Right.
So Blind Spotting, I mean, it's just, you know, during an actual police altercation. There's one in like a basement, there's one at a restaurant, like just, yeah, different settings. I would love to see more of that. Blind Spotting does it well.
This is going to be, yeah. So there's this movie called Fresh, which I love so much. And there's so many, like, 90s, like, black films that are, like, they're so good. They're so poetic, so layered, and they're so underknown. You know, so Fresh is one of them, and actually Samuel L. Jackson. And it's about it plays the father of this young kid who's navigating, like, I think it's like the Brownsville drug trade, and he's like 7 years old, and his father is like helping him navigate it through chess. It's wild.
Okay, I've never seen it. But I've heard of it.
They use the language of chess to help him like. Topple drug kingpins as a 7 year old. It's a brilliant film. I just think it's like, I would love to see that to get more shine, especially those who are like getting it. It just shows, you know, like, try to put craftsmanship into what you're saying and doing. You know what I mean? Yeah.
You know, I wish maybe not that they would talk more about it, but talk more about it unironically or without considering it cheesy. And we did it on the podcast too, Dead Poets Society. I wish more poets would talk about it. And in the sense, not like the themes inside, the exploration of mentors, all of that stuff. Whenever people talk about Dead Poets Society, they talk about it like the Rudy of poetry movies instead of right. what it
the
is.
The Rudy!
Right? Instead of what I find in it, right? Like, maybe
I need to rewatch.
No, because we did a rewatch, and I
found it cheesy. I didn't know.
Rewatch it okay. Now at this age with what you
okay,
know.
Yeah, fair. I think I watched it in those Fight Club in my 20s, looking for something real.
And that is exactly why I'm mentioning it. This is exactly why I'm mentioning it, because I have a lot of friends who write poetry who had a very similar reaction to you, maybe a little bit more like fuck that. Thing, and then they rewatch and they're like, dude, I'm like, yeah, man.
Yeah. Okay, maybe I'll do the rewatch. Appreciate that.
All right. Poet whose work feels cinematic.
For poetry, for poets, I don't know enough poets, you know.
Well, if you go performance poet, I mean, Flo Mentals.
Mental.
Charge of the Body with God. He has a boxing match with God, which would be a really cool little either short or type of film.
He was so good, dude.
And you could throw is there a hip hop album or even a song you would like to see expanded even into?
I just want to sing the Flo Mentals, man. He just had this thing where he had this poem, and the way it starts is, I had to go hard to the body with God, you know, which is just such a brilliant way to start a piece.
Great image.
It's like he throws you right in there. I had to, you know, and that's the way he sets the stage. You know, and it's like he's boxing God for the things that he finds unjust in the world, right? So it's like, that's for black on black crime. That's what, you know, and then God hit me with, and it's just like, it's, you know, and then he comes back with the refrain, I had to go hard at the body of God's. Because, you know, it's just, oh man, that's a guy, you know, he could have been, I mean, he should be on everyone's
radar,
yeah, but.
It brings to, but what medium too? Like, a lot of poems would benefit from becoming an animated film often when you have that
You know.
level of animation. We toyed with that idea for a while, like, anime him, being able to do something that would,
We had so many pun-related attempts to be entrepreneurs. We had Slam Chops, which was going to be our,
ran for a bit.
restaurant slash poetry education facility. We had WMHM poets, WMHM poets. I
Well, there
mean, we
were
had so many, whatever.
podcasts
But back to the topic, which is
another poet that would be
cinematic. So you had Low
legitimate.
Mentals. Oh man, cinematic poetry.
But he's
I
got.
remember this guy. I don't remember the Asia Project.
Oh yeah, Asia Sampson, who's
So,
in Florida. He's
he
out of
was so
Florida.
good, dude. He was just like so good, and it was like he just had me there, man. He just had me in like his world so deeply. It felt like, it felt like a film.
Neruda. I think Neruda's work feels cinematic, just very expansive. I can always see the images he's projecting. I love how he went from surrealist poet to ode to a sock, right? So it's just Neruda for me. A film that changed how you write.
Oh, that's good. Magnolia,
Oof.
I always would go to just that opening too. And there's something about he introduces all the characters in the first 1 minute, 2 minutes of his films a lot of the time, but the pacing of that. But the freedom with which that movie starts with the weird coincidences, I really, really, I think that influenced some of my writers.
I'm gonna go True Romance,
Ooh.
written by Tarantino. And I mean, so this is a scene, and the thing I love is when there's something disgusting in a film or something repulsive in a film, but so brilliant, right? There are two Tarantino scenes that do that for me, where like it's racist, it's fucking distasteful, but the dynamic is so brilliant. And so the one is there's a scene where they're chasing Christian Slater's character. The gangsters are chasing him, and they catch up to his dad, right? And his dad lives in a trailer, and he's this badass Dennis Hopper. And Christopher Walken, is like trying to get him to tell him
The
where his son
Sicilians,
is.
yeah.
Instead, it's like you think instead of just saying "fuck you," am I telling you, and I'm getting tortured. The way he does that is like, though, like you would never imagine someone doing it like that. Like he knows he's gonna die, no matter what. He takes a drag from a cigarette, and he insults Christopher Walken in like this wild, racist, weird, crazy way, and it's just like. So there's that one, and then the other thing, which is it's from Pulp Fiction, but it's
Which is
Christopher
watch.
Walken
Oh yeah,
and the Butcher's Watch. It's just it. I mean, those things to me
that's a
that
pop.
just changed my brain chemistry. Where I'm like, I gotta write some next level shit now. You know what I mean? So yeah.
A lot of films that have changed me tonally too. So ones that because you can start a poem serious. And then it become a riot or start it in comedic sense and then and the reverse. There's been a couple of people that have done that. Most recently was what was that one about the stripper that just came out that we saw at Telluride as well?
Anora.
Anora, which did that where it's taking such a serious topic but somehow you're laughing
What they had it
at
with
moments.
the Holocaust one too, we were just talking about with oh come on man, well, where they go to Auschwitz,
Life is beautiful. Oh, a real pain. A real
Real
pain.
Pain, where it's like they're literally at Auschwitz, but sometimes they're having light comedic moments between them, and sort of like that mise-en-scène, if you will, that it's out of place, but it sort of still works.
Yeah, and a lot of poets are afraid to do, or they don't. They stay on one tone throughout the
Yeah,
entire duration of the poem.
love a direction, a change in direction, or
Yeah, I
Or
keep us on our toes,
a
you
pretty
know?
serious poem, but that has a few laughs, that can
Right.
still have a few laughs.
Yeah, I myself in my work like showing mastery of a form and then breaking it apart just to try
Yeah, great.
something new, right? But like, oh, like showing that yes, I know what I'm doing, and then this is
Yep.
intentional, right?
Like being kept on my toes, yeah, for sure.
Do you think a movie that did that might have done that,
For
like
me, that changed
mastery,
how
and then
I don't know, but the one that changed how I write, the one that comes to mind is Before Sunset. The Before
oh
trilogy
wow.
I love. I love Linklater's
Beautiful.
Before trilogy. I think there's,
Beautiful.
you know, I think Lord of the Rings is a perfect trilogy. I think Kieslowski, Red, White, and Red,
Oh,
White,
the colors,
Blue, White, and
Decalogue.
Red
Yeah, well,
is
there's some colors in the books.
amazing. And the Before trilogy, Linklater's Before trilogy is great. But as I get older, I identify more with Before Sunset. I used to identify with Before Sunrise. I hope I never identify with Before Midnight. But when it comes to Before Sunset, just like the immediacy of the dialogue of a character study done over 10 years, coming to a culmination and just showing intimacy in very subtle ways. Like I know that I wrote a short story a couple years ago for an anthology, and now I'm thinking of using that short story in a book of short stories where the protagonist is never named, but it's thematically around, and just adding little moments like having a late night conversation with your girlfriend or your lover, and then all of a sudden you're in the middle of it, and oh, wait, I gotta go pee, and you go and you leave, and like little moments of life. The way that Linklater manages to infuse it in the dialogue of just making two people walking a city seem immensely interesting definitely has changed how I write.
Yeah, poems can synthesize long swaths of time too. Yeah, it's into that. Another thing that just popped up in my head was Anomalisa. Do you remember that? It was and Charlie Kaufman, purely animated, an animated dramatic film, and
Never saw
that
it.
proved like, oh, can an animated film be sexy as well as well scary
I mean, have you seen The Lion King? I was going
and
through puberty when
evoke
she gave him the
real
eyes, man.
genuine.
Like,
Well, but yeah, and real genuine emotion
I had a crush on Nala.
for adults, for that was strictly for adults. Yeah, Anomalisa did that. I mean, Up was the first one for kids that kind of did that too.
Up was, oh, destroys me. First 15
Yeah.
minutes, I'm like, I want all of that out of life, only I also want to have money. But that's what I want out of life, the first 15 minutes of Up.
I want Princess Mononoke in my life.
Yes, Princess
That's my
Mononoke.
favorite animation, but whatever.
Those are all
Studio
poetically. We'll get
Ghibli,
into one of those for yeah.
amazing, amazing. I remember the first time I saw Spirited Away. I know what theater I was in. I know what I was wearing. Like I just, it blew me away.
Studio
Okay.
Ghibli. Yes.
Tears in a Theater. What's the last movie you guys cried in?
Does that have to be in the theater?
It could be a movie. I mean, I know you
Okay.
travel a lot, so it could be crying on an airplane apparently seems to be a thing a lot of people are
Yeah,
doing
I
these
can say
days.
the airplane cries are a classic, but actually, it was quite recently. It's a Wonderful Life, which is one of my favorite all-time movies, and I got to watch it this. It had been a while since I watched it around the holidays, and me and a friend, we pulled it up, and it gets me every time. It gets me every. It like the level of gratitude that it's able to exude. And of course, the film itself is so dope. I mean, it's the basis for like the Back to the Future, it's the basis for like this, and based on, obviously like the Dickensian, sort of like Christmas Carol, vibes, right? Is that Fitzgerald? Who's the Christmas Carol?
Dickens.
Yeah, again. Where it's like, you're shown what life would be like if you weren't there, and then you're like, oh my God, I've touched all these people's lives, you know what I mean? And I can and I need to appreciate how they touch mine. And yeah, man, every time I just, Zuzu's
Everyone.
petals. Sorry.
It's wonderful life for me,
Wonderful.
always.
What about you, Scotty?
I was during his chair I was trying to search, and I'm a crier at a lot, at tons of everything, at anything I watch too. The last thing I watched was Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, and I was like, maybe I there shed a tear. At
Yeah.
that moment, there was some moment towards the
One of the
end
meatballs
where he
fell,
got
right?
corrupted by
Yeah.
power,
Wasted
this
food always
guy.
makes me cry.
Yeah.
Food is
So
important.
I welled up during Cloudy with a Chance for some reason.
Paddington 2.
Oh yeah.
The Bears?
If you watch the Paddington,
No Paddington.
they're fantastic.
That's hard for me to delve.
Paddington 3 is in Peru though, isn't it? Is
Yes,
it
and I
not?
cried at that one too, but then I rewatched. So I don't know what happened. It was just like, you know, the joke that happened in that Pedro Pascal, Nicolas Cage movie, The Unbearable Weight, A Massive Weight of Talent, or I forgot the name
Massive
of
talent,
that,
yeah.
of Massive Talent, The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. And they make the joke about what's your favorite movie? I know it's Face Off, it's The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, and it's Paddington 2. It's like,
Oh
what? It's like, well, it's like I cried the whole time, and it made me want to be a better man. Unironically, I could
yeah.
tell you,
Paddington, huh?
I
The
cried most of the
animation is
time,
so
and it
good.
made me want to be a better man. And now the inside joke we have is whenever something makes us emotional and we start crying, we just look at each other and we say, "He's just a little bear," and that's it.
I
That
gotta see
just means
Paddington
that
because
didn't mean
this is
just
animated,
cry
right?
you.
Yeah, but a real
CGI,
British
live action with CGI,
and
but no,
CGI.
it's incredible.
Oh, it's live
The
action
second
and
one
CGI.
is the second movie I would put up as a great film. The other movies
And
are
it's not
cool,
technically
whatever.
British? British, but had wide release, yeah.
Yeah, it has
But they have the accent, right?
Yep,
Yeah,
all English accents.
maybe I'm
So
padding it
Paddington
up.
2, man, that got me. That's the last one.
I'll hit a
But
padding.
there's other movies that make me
Oh, for sure.
freaking.
But just a recent. But
I
have you cried from a poem, hearing somebody else's poem?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I
And what
have.
about while delivering one of your own?
When I was practicing the one I delivered today,
Right,
when I was
that's the key.
memorizing it, I
I like
did.
they did that. You were just so frustrated you couldn't get the memorization.
Oh yeah, that's why. But it was really the
No, it was
taboo.
just like I kind of lost myself in the emotion of wanting to give somebody their flowers, but the only option I have now is to drop them at their grave, right? Like it's that I mean, to your point, it is frustration. It is a frustration of being unable to continue connecting in the same way that you used to,
Sure,
right?
no, that's way better point than I was making. Yeah, that's good. That's good.
All right.
For sure.
I'll do one more question. If you had a choice to either not watch a movie for the rest of your life or not read a poem for the rest of your life, what would you choose?
For me, it's hands down, I would not read a poem for the rest of my life. I mean, I love poetry. I love writing. I like reading poetry, but not as much as I like watching movies. I mean, a dope ass movie. Movie book would be for me, would be a tougher decision.
Okay.
Which I would still probably pick movie. I would want to say that I would pick book or some, real intellect type shit. But
Like the
I don't know,
idea
man.
of yourself as the one who would
I
pick
want to
book.
be that guy, but nah, I'm a movie head, dude. Like, I love a dope movie. You know what I'm saying? And like, that would suck. So
Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah, you were explicit in saying read as opposed to write. There would still
Yes,
be for
that was my
writing
way out
talk.
as well, Scott. I can
Right.
write a poem. It'll
You
be
can write
hard
a
to
poem.
review
A,
it because I
you
can't
can't
read
read
it,
your own
but I'll
piece.
write
Yeah, you
it.
can't read it. But so right where I feel now too, and doing this podcast, like, yeah, I want to make would love to make a poetic film. This all culminating into that. And so like whether I am in that film or not, maybe not necessarily. I want to, but yeah. But I also feel that we have to still be consuming, art. And I want to be consuming, new art in whatever medium to grow. I mean, that's, to grow and to experience the wide swath of emotions. I mean, I'm not looking at film as some people do, as pure escape too. I mean, yeah. Writing something has healed me. Watching something,
has healed me in some ways too. The reading of it, I don't know if it has. I wonder.
Yeah, books, yeah, for me, poems. I have some, but I'm underread as a poet. I have not read as much poetry as many poets who aren't necessarily like as, seasoned as writers or as poets, right? Like most people, I'll go to open mic and whatever. Yeah, I can write a dope ass poem. I feel very confident. I've been doing it for many, many years, and I can deliver that poem. But I would say, like, I'm like a lower percentage in terms of what I've actually read in poetry than your average, person who's at that open mic. You know what I mean? Which is kind of pathetic, but it is what it is,
But I mean,
I like to take from other mediums and bring it into poetry, but it's not an excuse. I feel like I'll probably be way iller as a poet if I actually knew more shit.
maybe, I'm more influenced by outside things too. I'm more influenced by film than reading poetry, but also by novelists or whatever. And you're still
Well, here's
reading,
what I
you're
can't
still
say.
reading novels.
I read shit, but not like Renzo, dude. I know Renzo be awesome. Like Renzo, I'm imagining your answer is you'd rather not the movies. Or what?
I'd like to be that guy, but no.
Ha ha
But
ha
I
ha.
you want to know, Kyle,
You're
what's the
closer to that guy than I am. I'll put it that way.
Well, I'll put it this way. I'll give you three guesses. What do you think is the movie I've watched the most in my entire life? Scott, you can't say it because I think you know.
Yep.
Oh, Happy Gilmore.
No, he knows some one of my favorites too.
Stop helping your
I'm
friend.
lowbrow, but
How
I
dare
mean, I'm
you?
not gonna get it. Action.
Oh,
I've watched that
Bloodsport.
movie over 100 times because
That's great.
when we first immigrated to the country, there was not we couldn't even afford Blockbuster Video. We had Eagle Video in the neighborhood. And my parents just like, yeah, okay, Bloodsport. And they rented it. And we would be 6 years old watching Bloodsport.
So great.
You know,
They should do
back in the 80s, late 80s, early 90s, I remember having a great childhood, but I don't think our parents cared that much. They pretended to care or they thought they cared about what we watched. But I watched James Bond with my dad when I was 4. He didn't fast forward anything. I was just, so, I'm growing up on these things. James Bond is one of my favorite things, and I love that film series completely. And I'm thinking conceptually of doing like ekphrastic poems on James Bond, a poem about nuclear proliferation because of Dr. No, right? Or the Cold War because of From Russia with Love, and for like the gold standard for economic whatever because of Goldfinger. There's things you can pull out, but it's still like I love
right.
these movies. So if I've already read poems, I don't know if I could say I want to live my life
My
while
life.
watching Van Damme do a spin kick one more time. Just one more time.
Love that, dude. Well, they should do a Tao of Bloodsport or something. You know what I mean? It's
Well, I
like
think
there's
maybe.
something the spirituality and philosophy, underneath such a mindless experience of as watching Bloodsport is deep.
I think the movie that we need to make is Blood Poet. And it will be
Maybe.
about Kuma poetry or something,
Only
but yeah.
if I can play
Bolo Young.
the actor who played young Van Damme in that movie.
Oh,
That is
yeah, the swiper.
like
Yeah. But
I
I
wasn't
wonder
going to
if
steal it. Like I that is my
yes.
that's my
That's
favorite.
Well, I wanted to quickly just interject with, because I talk to people, because I lived in LA for a while, and they're like, oh, I'm making movies. I'm making movies, And I'm like, what do you like? And they don't even watch movies, And so, like, and that always irks me. And like, I do, but at the same time, I do kind of feel like that person who, I am into poets and rap is poetry. And that's,
Rap is
but like, I
poetry.
still feel like there's that I need to lock in more to the literary side of poetry. And does make me feel like a little bit of a phony.
But what we were talking about a lot is like when we were performing that now you're going back into the classics after, because you have
The
the
gateway
legitimate
drug.
the gateway and Shakespeare for me has always been a through line. on watching it as opposed to reading it more so, seeing these productions, but that actor voice is infusing everything that I do. But hip hop is taking from that too. It's taking from life.
One form, but yeah, there's so many more different, forms you can rock with that I just feel like, yeah, I've limited myself a bit, but whatever, whatever. Let me
So
self-loathing aside.
I'll chime in with this. A friend of mine called me the other day and said, "Hey, you're a published author. I'm thinking of writing a book, but what class should I take in order to be ready?" What I told her was, "I will never tell you not to take a class. By all means, do that. But if you are an avid reader, you can write. You also have your own voice based on your own life experiences, something you and I were talking about earlier today, Kyle. Your own life experiences, your give you a framework for processing information and give a unique viewpoint of the world. Why dilute that voice, right? So you have that, you're putting it forth. And now if you want to read other works from other people that you haven't had a chance to in the past, but you're ready to now, doesn't need to be punitive. Great. You're here. You're going to read something else just to see if it's something that brings you joy, because if it doesn't, why do it? Right?
That's a big piece. I think the other piece, if you're going to create art, I think it is good to be not, I mean, whatever. I'm not necessarily doing it in that lane, right? So it kind of, but if you are to create art in a certain lane, I think it is important to know a decent amount about that lane. I'm not saying,
I
you
agree.
see rappers and they're, okay, what you're doing is like a weaker version of this artist. You don't know where you stand to create something that at least has some innovation to it, unless what's been done to a certain degree, right? So I think that's when I talk about a little bit of the distaste for when like someone says they're going to get into making movies and not even like deep fans of movies. It's like, how are
I mean, maybe that's why you vibe with Tarantino, right? Like I know he gets criticized
cinephile.
for, I think he considers himself
Couple
in
shades.
dialogue with the Shaw brothers and all of these directors from Asia in the 70s because he sees them as contemporaries. But if he was really trying to plagiarize them, then why is he the only one trying to show their work too, right? I think he just wants more people
Yeah,
to,
exposed.
yeah, I mean,
Well, he's a legit cinephile, right? And so like he's hip hop to me in that like he's sampling, all of these like things that he was deeply influenced by that are like deep cuts, right? Like they're deep in the crates that most people are gonna, and then he's bringing it to life in a way with a big budget now that he had, has the success he has, and then putting his own stank on it in a way that's just like holy shit, I mean when that shit hits. And think of what you may about his shit talk about Paul Dano. You know what I mean? But yeah.
Is there a term for being a poetophile or somebody that is obsessive with poetry? But is there a better term for someone that all they do is read and write poetry?
Versophile?
Versatile. You
Versatile?
say it.
Versophile?
That's kind of cool. I like that term. Versophile is kind of a dope,
Versatile.
It's kind of dope.
Okay. Perhaps we'll print it.
The
Well,
Versafile tour.
Kyle, we would love to have you back. Thank you so much for joining. Scott, thank you for introducing me to your friend. I vibe with him too. I'm looking forward to developing a friendship with him. And this has been another episode of Real Poets. I am Renzo del Castillo, joined
Yeah,
by
Raven
with
raps,
with
Kyle
our guest, with
raps.
Kyle Raps. And remember to always keep it real.
Cosmo Marie Claire, Essence 17, Vanity Fair.
See, we are living in the mask era,
where mascara is the face's foundation for faking.
An image is everything sacred.
So when it's raining, take cover, girl. Cause maybe it's Maybelline saying you weren't born with it.
Since it needs to be brushed,
plucked,
applied, or painted till you're waking up every day with a pillow full of makeup you slept on all night, taking hours after showers, rocking Revlon so tight you're like, mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the prettiest of the
mall?
In the food court,
on the escalator,
standing outside the arcade with a Gucci sweater, taking slow drags, thinking she's all that,
with a Coach bag,
where people
express
their sense of style at
Abercrombie,
with shirts from
Fitch
that barely fit and show much midriff, making sure their wardrobe is not limited to Old Navy.
So reputations don't fall in the
gap.
And every March, April,
Macy's, a fresh spring collection, and everyone knows
Victoria's Secret
about her Calvin Klein obsession.
Spending your last
J.C. pennies to usher in every lustful confession.
Cosmo, Marie Claire, Essence 17, Vanity Fair, YM Ebony, Tiger Beat.
Imagine you are Kelly
Clarkson.
Some people bake a lifetime in tanning salons,
seeking darker skin, while others sprawl half naked and burn on beaches where the sharks swim, never finding answers, only cancers and silicone enhancers.
Egos crushed beneath these high heel beauty standards,
where life is like a box of
runway model wannabe Miss America.
Can't eat nothing but pretend they're not hungry,
swallow diet pills to appetite assassin.
But riots still swell inside you.
The pot
calling the kettle
fat until there's self-esteem whistling out the top, cause all you eat is hot air.
It's not fair that our perception of a great body is one that's basically not there. Where dreams are so unreal that by the time you achieve them, all you care about is what people see on the surface.
But there's a garden beneath the skin that's not breathing, cause you're more concerned with
photo images
than photosynthesis.
So wake up.
Wake up.
Smell the roses on the inside.
Let the lilacs of truth bloom
with expression and compassion.
So we can move forward from this mask era, cause it's time for who you are to be in fact.
Cosmo, Marie Claire, Essence 17, Vanity Fair, YM Ebony, Tiger Beat, Oh Allure, Mademoiselle, Oxygen, Teen People in Spanish, Swimsuit Edition.
Real Poets is produced and hosted by Renzo del Castillo and Scott Raven. Original music composed by Gabby Weitzenfeld. Episode art and visuals by the Real Poets team. New episodes come out every other Thursday. Hit subscribe, download the episode, and leave a review to help us grow. This has been a Real Poets production. And remember to always keep it real.